XM Radio.
More winning is ready for you in September at Remington Park. Racing begins at 6:30 p.m. Wednesday through Saturday. Make your plans now for Oklahoma Derby Day. Sunday, September 29th features the Oklahoma Derby, the Hat and Tie Style Contest for big cash prizes, and the Derby Day Wine Tasting Festival. Oklahoma Derby Day begins at 3 p.m. on September 29th. Visit RemingtonPark.com for group rates, suite rentals, and more. Get more winning excitement in the Remington Park Casino, where the jackpot action never ends. Parking and admission are free at Remington Park.
For racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. Bleeding all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Created specifically for horse racing. Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in rural horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile Tapeta training track, GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
Fans, our live meet here at Santa Anita Park will return on Friday, September 27th. And the first ever California Crown Day at Santa Anita will be held on Saturday, September 28th. It is a day that will include the $1 million California Crown Stakes, along with two Grade 2 stakes worth $750,000 each. It will also include premium compound experiences with incredible food and beverage options, along with world-class live musical performances, interactive experiences, and cutting-edge technology. Griffin, Little Yachty, and Shabuzi are just some of the live acts that will be performing. You can get tickets at CaliforniaCrown.com. For additional information regarding our autumn meet, go to SantaAnita.com. California Crown Day, Saturday, September 28th. Will be an unforgettable day of world-class racing and world-class entertainment that you will not want to miss here at the great race place, Santa Anita Park.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and I'm just trying to balance. Let me do this. Brian, go to Nick. Go to Nick Tamaro now, and we'll flip-flop him with Dale, because Nick, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, let's do that. All right, you okay with that? I think he's okay. Yeah, all right. So, yeah, let's get Nick. Let me tell him we're going to come now because he's doing something. If this works with him, okay. All right, good. Everybody's good. Dale's good with it, and Nick is so good with it that he's on the line. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It felt like you called me so quickly after we were texting that there's a Sopranos episode. It's the first episode, I think, of the sixth season called Members Only. And in it, the Eugene Pontecorvo, who the character, of course, who played him, was a regular at Saratoga, big racing fan. And his phone rings, and his wife says, his master's voice. And when my phone rang just now, I felt like that. you were that dedicated to getting me on that here I am waiting for you, my man. So glad to be joining you.
Well, you know, you're like an international, you know, international presence. You're this Shibuzi of handicapping.
Yes, that's one way to put it. And yes, I did have to tell you I couldn't come on at 11 because I'm hosting the JRA segment of the Get the Money Media podcast. And I'm actually bizarrely looking incredibly forward to it just to simply ask Klaus Ebner, who is an international racing fan and an expert and a great guy, and some questions about Ushba Tesoro and Forever Young in addition to the Sprinter Stakes this weekend. So we can certainly cross-promote what's going on there. So, yeah, a lot of fun. I'm in Louisville. It's pouring rain. It's actually not pouring. It's raining. It's getting windy, but it's still a fun time. Downs After Dark will be fun tomorrow, but everybody's lederhosen might end up getting a little damp.
I was going to say, I asked the other day what the Downs After Dark theme was going to be, and KK said Oktoberfest, and I thought, that'll be quite a scene. You would look like a major Burgermeister in the lederhosen.
I think I would need like two of those stitched together. Right, something like that. I was actually in when I studied abroad in Italy. We went to Munich right around early November, so it was just after Oktoberfest, and it was still a party. It was phenomenal. I mean, it must be an absolute blast. I kind of wrote it down as a later in life, almost must do kind of thing. But yeah, boy, we were at the end of a 10-day trip. I drank 3 liters of beer and passed out on the train home. And I remember getting to Bologna and being totally hungover, but feeling great.
That'll provoke me to talk about going to Anuga to the big, you know, there's an international, not so much international, European food show. It is international, but it's European based, Sial. The Sial and Anuga alternate between Paris and Cologne. And so I've never been to it in Paris, but we'd go to Anuga and in Cologne, and so much fun, and which surprised me. Going to kind of training around Germany. My family didn't have a great history of trains in Germany, the experience actually was good. And I will say one thing. I remember having like a bratwurst at the train station, which might have been the best bratwurst I've ever had. It was unbelievable how good it was.
Oh, I was just going to say, and you know, the other thing that we were missing, having been in Europe for 3 months at that point, was ironically an American style breakfast. Right, we had not quite adopted. We were all, you know, assimilated enough to eat a piece of hard bread with Nutella on it, but. Boy, when we went to a hotel and had an American-style breakfast, and it was like manna from heaven. It came out of nowhere. The other thing, too, was that, and of course, I mean, I would never besmirch my countrymen, but having been in Italy for most of those 3 months and then going to Germany where everything is remarkably efficient, it was like, wow, that's what this feels like. You know, the trains don't just run whenever they feel like it, and you don't get a posting on Thursday night that everybody's on strike tomorrow. You know, they were going nuts when the train was a minute late. So there is definitely something very true about the whole German efficiency, but it was a great place, and I look forward to the opportunity to get back. And in the meantime, I'll just have to take in Oktoberfest at Churchill Downs After Dark.
I love it. Well, you know, that you just explained why Mussolini was so popular, because he, of course, famously made the trains run on time.
Nobody committed crime either, I can tell you that.
this went in unexpected directions. The
History Lessons with Nick and Steve, right? This is a podcast nobody is subscribing to.
You'd be surprised. Nick, the weekend, you know, I'm sitting here at Aqueduct. You've had a busy morning, so you might not have realized I was down here.
I figured you were for California. I actually was going to ask where you were.
Well, I just said to Nate Newby, and I said to Brad last night, we were talking, and you know, I'm not one that needs the, you know, the wraparound party, you know, atmosphere to be interested. The racing interests me. But I will say this. This week I've said to myself a couple of times, geez, I'm sorry I didn't go out there for this, because it's really an attractive proposition at a clever juncture, timing wise, I think this thing is gonna be a success.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Steve. We all sort of have the obligation to pull for it and to do what we can to support it, because the industry, the game needs it, right? The game needs big days back in the fall. And I mean, outside of Keeneland, and obviously Keeneland does an excellent job with the racing, and Keeneland's a great experience for fans and whatnot. But you know, because of the way these staples of the fall racing calendar have just eroded over time, with everybody training up from the Del Mar and Saratoga meets to the Breeders' Cup. You know, hats off to them for trying something, right? Racing's a hard game in which to build something. And they're trying to take a race that has generally been pretty well supported over the years, because the horsemen have been involved in the Goodwood and the Awesome Again, whatever iteration of it was. But you know, hats off to them for trying to build that into something a little bit better, putting money into a couple of undercard races to try and get them built up. They got a very nice field for the Eddie D, and it's a downhill turf race, which I think fans and bettors just love, for a variety of reasons. So I'm glad they're trying something. You know, the ancillary stuff, the celebs and the concerts and things like that, that is obviously, it's foolish for people like me to make comments on that, because I am not the target audience. There is a target audience out there, and I hope that they come out in a great amount of support. So, because it behooves all of us to pull for this to work for racing, and I definitely mean that, not only for the game across the country, but specifically for the game in Southern California, which yeah. You know is a proposition right now that obviously looks like it could benefit from any amount of support.
Exactly right. Well, no shortage of wagering choices, and I even folded in some of the other options, particularly Laurel's in trouble with off the turf, but Prairie Meadows has got their big closing weekend card with almost all stakes, and Nate just mentioned the Coast to Coast, which utilizes the two races at Gulfstream and three of the stakes at Santa Anita, and then here out of New York, where it feels, Nick, like we're going to be okay. There is some rain that's going to pass through at some point tomorrow, but it doesn't look like enough to interrupt the two major turf stakes here.
Yeah, that's good, obviously. you know, quite honestly, I think those courses could probably handle a little rain. It's been warm, and I think maintenance of those turf courses has probably been a lot more difficult than it's ever been before, simply because of the sheer number of races that are being run on them, right? You're talking about two courses that saw probably no more than, you know, 150 races on a yearly basis that are now going to get somewhere between three and four times that when all is said and done. So hoping for good conditions on both, and obviously one is on the inner, one's on the outer. There are other turf races scheduled, so we'll hope that the weather holds up really well. The weather's been remarkably good throughout this meet so far. So should we run through some of the Delmo at the Big A action? So just wanting to touch on the graded stakes that don't really have as much. They're not in a multi-race sequence. one of the, you know, prime multi-race sequences, but I feel obligated to at least mention the Woodward, and obviously this is not going to be a redux of St. Liam and commentator, but to put it mildly, K Army's going to scratch. That's why he's 9-9-1 on the morning line. Skippy Longstocking should really win this race. He's a horse that I've really never warmed up to, and I guess it's time for me to at least acknowledge that at the very least he has been one of the better campaigned horses we've seen in quite some time, because his connections have gotten him into one big money spot after another, and he's delivered. He should control the pace in this race. I would imagine that one of the Pletcher horses will likely fill in the exacta, and it'll be relatively simple. I would guess that maybe if you feel inclined to bet this race, maybe you choose the longer of the two Pletchers for the exacta and take your $7 and move on. So that goes as the fourth. The sixth is the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic. Now, this is a far more interesting race, and quite honestly, they have a lot of big fields late in the card, but I wouldn't have minded putting this in the pick five or pick six sequence, because it's really, you know, it's not going to have a short price favorite. I don't see how it could, because there's plenty of appeal. There are really a few horses I think that can win each one, so I'm looking forward to it, and we'll see how that ends up shaking out. So on the as far as the Joe Hirsch Turf Classic goes, I think there'll be a real pace. Get Smokin' from the inside, as well as Emmanuel, who is stretching out and adding blinkers. I think you can plan on him showing a lot more speed, and that'll set the table for the horses that are really the principals in this race, drawn towards the outside. The interesting thing about Warlike Goddess is that she is probably really as exposed at this point as she's been, and you're going to get the best price on her you've gotten since last year's Turf Classic, because she lost her last race. And she really lost her last race in circumstances that were never going to play out favorably for her. So I don't blame anybody that wants to give her another chance. She certainly is at her best in a mile and a half. She should get pace to run at. She's run well here. I think David made her, well, he made her 8-5, so I didn't actually expect her to be that short a favorite. I thought she'd be a little bit longer priced than that. He made Silver Knot 2-1. So we'll see how the betting ends up. The question is, I mean, do you really think Farbridge is good enough to beat these horses without the advantage of having a relatively easy lead on the inside of a super firm turf course? I think the smart money would be betting against that, but now he'll still be 7-2. He was 8-1 last time. I don't have a great inclination to bet this race, but I am definitely intrigued by how it could all shake out from both a tactical standpoint and who's making the best move late. These races obviously end up being influenced by jockeys more so than a lot of others. So those are the two greatest stakes on the undercard, so to speak. Go ahead.
There's a horse we got to talk about.
Who's that?
Truly Quality. Quality.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree.
6-1, broke his maiden here, and not here, he broke it at Belmont, but he won an allowance here. Irad broke the maiden with him. He's got tactical speed. He can come from well out of it. He's closed into slow paces. He's attended moderate paces. At 6-1, he's a horse that is moving forward as he ages. I mean, Jonathan Thomas, this is a gelding, so he's going to be around. What? No, Dave.
Why do I bother?
You heard it live. Truly Quality's coming out, Nick.
Well, there you go. Dave Grenning on the spot.
Unbelievable. Oh, my God. Well, that was good, though. A live why? Why does he write this stuff?
Tanya Harding making an appearance on the show. That's okay. I was at the barn before, and I told Brad Cox before we went on camera, I was asking about three horses, and the third horse was scratched. So I said, well, I really saved myself from looking like an idiot. And so then I waited for us to get together so that we could both look foolish. But, I was wondering about that horse. I mean, look, Jonathan Thomas scratches a lot of horses, so I was not going to be shocked if the horse was scratched. He was the interesting kind of fresh face,
yes.
No doubt about it. For as good as Jonathan Thomas has done in his career so far, just 1-15 in graded stakes in New York over the last 5 years, .09 ROI, but I would imagine we'll see Truly Quality in another stake. Maybe he'll go to the L Corner or whatever the fall, Sycamore, yeah. I think is the race, Keeneland, I think you can imagine seeing him there. But no, he ran very well. He beat a terrible field in that one other event, but he beat him like a draw. Right, and he ran a figure that was definitely fast enough to put him in the mix. And, you know, I was looking forward to betting Webslinger back after his wide trip at Monmouth, and he handled him quite easily. So, back to regularly scheduled programming, huh?
Well, Dave wanted to confirm, though. He was likely to scratch, and he just confirmed with Jonathan that truly quality will scratch. I think that's a mistake. I thought this was a great spot for him. Wow. All right. So be it.
Well, certainly, he certainly shouldn't be scratched because he can't compete, because that would be a mistake.
No.
If he's scratched exactly. because he's going somewhere else, you know, I don't get it. Hopefully, he's healthy, because if he's healthy, this would have been an excellent spot to test a grade one. And I mean, there's a limited amount of grade ones in this division, especially with the UN losing it. So, and they're gonna probably put a grade one on every ridiculous race at Kentucky Downs they can before the ones that are actually grade ones. So,
yeah. All right. Well,
anyway.
Then. Yeah, press on.
So, pick five starts in the eighth. A New York bred 2-year-old turf sprint is a really tough race. The 3 Silsby is the morning line favorite, a firster by Vekoma. Obviously, Vekoma's been excellent first out with 2-year-olds, 14 for 48 overall. Just 1 for 12, first time turf. So, I'm a little unsure. I want to wait and see the workout reports. The sources worked twice on the turf over the around the dogs up at Saratoga. George Weaver with very good numbers with these types, most of which he amassed last year. But this is a horse who I think could be really ready to go first time out. I'm a little intrigued by the 5 Graceful Warrior for Jenna Antonucci, second time out. Horse took a little bit of money on debut. It was not a particularly strong race. It was a maiden auction as opposed to a New York bred race. And this horse was way poorly, got into a little bit of trouble going to the turn, looks like a real candidate to improve. The story of this race, though, Steve, is if the 13 gets in. If the 13 gets in, she's going to be a pretty short-priced favorite. I think she'll go down off the 5-2 morning line based on the quality of her debut, rallying well for Mark Cassie. Although it does have to be said, you know, Mark had an incredible Saratoga meet, and so you would expect some regression to the mean, and we've definitely seen that. His horses have not performed at the same level since, but we also know that Mark is a trainer whose horses are ready to go more often than not, so I'd probably use a combination of those. The Vosburgh is the second leg. This is a tough race, so I'm going to try and take about as much of a stand as I can. I like Dean Delivers. I feel like Ned Allard has sent horses that were live to New York more often than not. And for as good a job as Michael Yates did with this horse, he's actually taken a real step forward for Ned Allard. And I don't know if it's maybe that the right spots were picked out, but he's run against some good horses. He beat Little Vic. He beat Gordian Knott, who's a hard-knocking mid-Atlantic-based horse. And last time out, he was victorious at 5/8. Now he goes 7. Yeah, he's probably better a little bit shorter than that, but, boy, he's got a big pace advantage on these horses. And if he can take advantage of that, I think he's a very big threat to go wire to wire. I don't have anything really against Comedy Town or Mufasa. I probably prefer Comedy Town of the two. He's in very good form at the moment for Safi, and obviously this is a barn that's winning on a pretty regular basis, as usual. So once he got this horse back to dirt, he's really taken a big step forward, and he's going to be latched on to Dean Delivers early, so it should be a pretty honestly run race. My off-the-wall, late-running, probably clunk-up type is Lord Miles, who returns to the site of his upset win in the Wood Memorial and is an interesting cutback. I think he can be effective around one turn. He did run second in the Robert Hilton at Charlestown. That, of course, is a two-turn race, but still he was second behind a razor-sharp Damon's Mound at the moment. So I could see him running a little bit better on the cutback here. The 10th is just a super, super tough and competitive turf route where I think you could go a number of different directions. The 3 Booties,
I've never known either.
Yeah, he's the horse to beat. The problem is he doesn't win that much. He's on a 9-race losing streak. He's had some narrow misses. He was beaten when probably best 3 starts back, but comes in on a drop, coming out of the Bernard Baruch, gets Lasix back on, never a bad thing. I thought the 6 Freedom Trail, who I really couldn't find an excuse for last time. I'm hoping that he runs a little bit better second off the layoff. It was a bad Saratoga for John Terranova, so he's a candidate to improve. And I thought that the 9 Irish Prophet for Neil Drysdale was a little interesting. I know you're supposed to be careful with West Coast turf form, but speed figure-wise, this horse fits, and I think he can be very dangerous, as I think that Ruse can be dangerous. I think he's been running well against better, and he's a horse who's generally been pretty solid at Aqueduct. So the only other one worth mentioning, I'd say, is the 11 Wonderful Justice for Joe Sharp. I don't love this trainer change, and this is a horse that when push comes to shove has lost 6 races in a row, has not won since early in his 3-year-old season. I'm not really sure how much Joe Sharp is supposed to move up off Mike Maker, but that is a really difficult race. The horse I'm looking forward to the most on the card tomorrow is the 1 Noble Confessor in the Pilgrim. This horse is bred nicely for turf. is by Quality Road. Yes, the dam was a one-time turf winner, but she's a half to Sweet Melania and Sweet Rebecca, both of whom were debut turf winners. Sweet Melania ran third in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf back in 2019. Sweet Rebecca, of course, won her first two starts, including a stake for Chad Brown, and was highly regarded earlier this year. So this is a real turf move-up pedigree. This horse is also supposed to go straight to the front. And if he's able to get the lead and back this pace down a little bit, I think he can be a big, big threat to wire the field. He's going to be a square price, too. I don't really trust Zulu Kingdom, who I thought got the best of it trip-wise last time out. If I get alive, I'll be alive to the 6, 8, and 12 in the nightcap. I feel like the 12 Guile is the horse to beat. Dirt for the first time for Maker, second off the claim. And this is a horse that that really ran good enough for Bobby Rabato. And, you know, I mean, with all due respect to Bobby Rabato, Mike Baker's a better trainer. So if he can run those races on dirt for Maker, he likely should improve, and that would make him tough.
I'll mention that a couple of things. Going back to that 10th for a minute, Nick, there is a 20-1 shot in here that deserves at least a mention. Magical Ways is all dirtied up from people aren't going to even glance at him. In part, I suppose, because of Romero Marat, but Marat won on him, and the off-the-turf race at Saratoga, you know, kind of obscures that very good performance in similar company. He's a knockout horse at 20-1, the 10 Magical Ways.
No, I like it. And to be honest with you, Steve, as far as Romero Mirage goes, if Romero Mirage had Manny Franco's mounts, he'd be a 30% jockey. He is a very, very underrated jockey, and he puts horses in good positions more often than not. I mean, take that third-place finish behind Baloney and Ocean Atlantique three starts back. He was inside the whole way, saved ground, got him out. He put a really good ride on the Pat Reynolds second-time starter at Saratoga. I can't remember the horse's name, but it was a sixth race on a Thursday, and did everything right. Frank Miramati even noted in his race call, he had a perfect trip. So Romero is a very good jockey. Romero also astutely realized yesterday when he was riding Phileas Fogg that the inside was absolutely the place to be, and then I somehow got beaten in the last leg of a multi-race bet again when I needed the five in the nightcap for a mint, but you know, that's life, so I like it. I'll take any 20-1 shots in here. They're a really tough race.
I singled Sassy Alley.
I didn't like it. Well, I like the five, so all I got alive to was the 2 and 5.
That sucks. Wow.
I didn't like the whole three-year-old filly facing males thing. I thought there was other speed. I didn't trust the 10. I wanted to get alive to the 2 and 5, so I had to pick three multiple times, and yeah, it was luckily I was doing something work-related and missed a race. Got back in time to see the post-race and was like, oh, dear, I hope it wasn't close. And I watched the replay and said some expletives. I'm on a bad, bad run of losing multi-race bets in the last leg for good-sized money. Ever since Angiola ran down Geopolitics at Saratoga, there's probably been about five or six of them that have not gone well. And the few that I've hit have just not really been that lucrative. But, you know, that's how it goes. One of these days I'll get a good DQ or I'll get a good result. And actually, you know what it is? It's right off Jerry's DQ. Since right off Jerry got put up in the nightcap the first week at Saratoga, I've had everything go the other direction. And, of course, I made nothing on right off Jerry compared to what I've been beaten in. But, you know, that's a horse players will know.
Well, and I wouldn't have known this because slash your wrists on Twitter after every one of them.
I don't. I have a dear friend who tells me about all of his beats, and I told him one time, I said, you're going to have to tell me when you win also, because either you are the most cursed horse player of all time, or you're being kind of a dirty word I refer to him as, and he started to send me his wins too, so I felt much better.
That's pretty funny. The cross country tomorrow in New York partners up with Delaware with the 7th and the 8th from Delaware. I that are just a couple of races. They're just rank and file, starter allowance and a claimer. Kind of interesting. 7th and 8th.
I will admit that got by me. I wasn't able to dope out the 12-5 two life claimer from Delaware. I've now clicked on since you brought that up, but yeah. Right. Andy. You guys are a little star for content, huh?
Well, of all the places, I mean, there are, they're, you know, there was a couple of other options out. That's all right. Listen, the little track that could. We love Delaware.
No, absolutely.
Anything else? Anything else you looked at over the? Because you handicap about 14 tracks.
Yeah, I looked at Santa Anita. I mean, I don't think I have a stakes opinion that I'd want to, you know, I really need to give everybody. I want to bet the horses in the nightcap, the City of Hope Mile, that were trying to make up ground in the Del Mar Mile last time out. So, I mean, I think who I'm speaking about specifically are Almendarez, the 8, who's going to be 10-1, who gets Pratt. Because the interesting thing to me, Steve, and you know, you have made me much more of a Paragraph, I don't know if I want to say devotee, but certainly somebody who's you know, dabbling in it a lot more, and I'm keeping some of my own records of, you know, what kind of patterns work and whatnot. But, and I understand that in turf racing often there isn't a huge spread between the best and worst horses in the race, but Johannes is not appreciably faster than everybody in this race. So he is faster on a consistent basis, but he's not the layover that he might be on buyer figures, and even so, I mean, he's about 4 or 5 points faster on his best day than everybody else. He also got a really soft trip last time in the Eddie Reed, and I understand these are California-based connections, but I also wonder a little bit why they're not trying to race Akima next week for significantly more money. I know they probably don't want to ship. With that said, I want to bet Almendarez, who I'm hoping there's enough pace to set him up, hopefully conclude, ends up moving out with Paxawala, but I like Pratt getting on it. Don't really know if this horse will be 10-1. I don't see him being a bigger price than he was in the Del Mar Mile, but he was definitely against the grain of the race last time out and ran very, very well. So, I picked the obvious, what I thought were the obvious horses in the California Crown. I picked Substantator, who's going to be the best price of the win candidates, but, you know, I'm not going to be surprised if this is a Baffert exacta. I am intrigued to see how Senor Buscador runs. I think he could be a horse that takes a lot more money in the Breeders' Cup than he deserves, having won the Saudi Cup, because I really think the Saudi Cup is his game. A one-turn race, right. An elongated run is really what he does best. But we'll see. You know, it's a fun race. Good to see them together. I wanted to pick against Big Invasion and the Eddie D, but boy, you want to talk about Serigraph figure advantage. I mean, that horse looks faster than everybody he's running against in there.
Yep.
So I think he'll be pretty tough. And then the John Henry is a good race. I haven't actually made my pick. I wanted to watch a few more replays. But that looks like a race that maybe could lend itself to a little bit more chaos than some of the other stakes that look somewhat formful. I did like a horse in the Unzip Me, as I scroll up to that. It was a pretty wide open. I like Zona Verde on the cutback. I think she might be at her best sprinting. So I'm excited to see how that shakes out. But yeah, fun card, and looking forward to combining the back half of that card with a little bit of Downs After Dark. It'll all take place around the same time.
Excellent. And finally, any insight or reaction to last weekend in Philly?
Yeah. You know, I thought the track was pretty tilted towards inside speed, which I think helped. I think everybody went a little, I think we got treated to a lot of bad trip analysis on Torpedo Anna. I thought Torpedo Anna was not nearly as good as we'd seen her at her best, but it's okay. I don't really know if she was necessarily trained to be at her best. I don't know if she probably had. I think, if anything, her trip was maybe slightly uncomfortable. But one of the things about Torpedo Anna that I've always grown to appreciate, and why Brian Hernandez Jr., who's one of the most, if not the most, underrated rider in the game, why he fits her so well, is that she's, as you would say, plucky. Right? I mean, you can put her anywhere. You can put her inside. You can put her outside. You can put her on the lead. You can put her a little bit off of it. She is extremely versatile and very athletic in that respect. So I think when they straightened out, she was probably supposed to take in Gunsong a little bit faster. I don't really know if she was hard-pressed to do it. Obviously, the distaff objective got a lot easier with Adair Manor being retired. So I'm really looking forward to seeing her run against Idiomatic and anybody else who wants to line up. I know there's going to be some Japanese participation there as well. So it was not a wow performance, but it was a solid win and one that'll definitely spring her forward. Seize the Gray obviously took advantage of the track profile, but excellent ride by Jamie Torres, and I think it was a formful result in that nobody overperformed, nobody did anything that is supposed to shock us relative to what our expectations were. So I thought it was a good day. I wish the track had been a little bit, or maybe a little bit fairer overall, and I wish that they hadn't tried to run a race on the turf course, but they did, and so it's behind us, and we'll see what happens now with some of the horses coming out of it.
Excellent. Well done, Nick. How long are you staying in the Ville?
I will be here until Sunday morning. I'm going to hop back to Houston as early as possible for Texans Jaguars on Sunday at noon, the little one's first football game.
I turned her into
a sports fan. We went to like 15 Astros games this year. She was like touting her fandom to everybody, and she has a CJ Stroud jersey. So does my wife. So we're very pumped for this Texans game. I think the roof's going to be open too because the hurricane broke some of the panels on the roof, so it could be a little toasty. They opened it for the night game against the Bears a couple of weeks ago, but you know, at night, Houston gets a bad rap weather-wise. At night, it's comfortable to be outside, but I don't know about noon. It's supposed to be 92 on Sunday.
Oh yeah! Wow.
We're in the shaded end of the stadium, but it's gonna get pretty wild in there.
Oh boy! All right. Well, enjoyed the full. That's a full docket. And Tam,
you know,
free
time is like anathema to me.
Well, exactly. Your dance card is always full.
I'll be betting Acrobat as I sit there and watch the text. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks
a
lot. You too.
Good luck.
Fantastic. Nick Tamaro, folks, and Tam. And standing by. And first order of business is to say thanks to Dale Day for flip-flopping with Nick, who now has got some Japanese podcasting to do. Dale, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Hope everybody's well. We get ready for Oklahoma Derby.
Well, and the card came up very nice, but before we look ahead, let's look back to last Friday night. And you had the turf sprint, Austin Gustafson, and I saw Steve Asmussen took that red earth, and do you wanna dance in the Bob Berry?
Yeah, it was pretty formful, those three races that we talked about last week, and it's how they turned out, and a couple of repeat winners, so... it's a good turf card for the Oklahoma Breds, and we used to run those races the Friday prior to the Oklahoma Derby a couple days early, but we backed them up to give those Oklahoma Breds another extra week to get set for the Oklahoma Classics state red card coming up in mid-October. So it worked out. Everybody's happy, and I was disappointed in my pick in the Red Earth with number one Dude. He was rolling to come off the turn and just got shut off and found all kinds of traffic trouble, which seems like most of my picks seem to do. But... I'm circling him next time. Next time out, I'm sure he'll be in the Oklahoma Classics, the big race, the Cup, back on the dirt. But he was making a move, and I thought, you know, with a quarter mile to go, he had a shot, but he didn't have the room. But that's how it goes.
Well, the stage is set for Sunday, and with all this big racing on Saturday, this works out beautifully. You'll have the focus pretty much to yourself. Santanita has got the two stakes on Sunday, but this card starts at 4:03 Eastern time, and the stakes action kicks off with the Flashy Lady. That's at 5:03, race three, and then it's hot and heavy. The Remington Green and the Gaylord, the Kip DeVille, the Ricks Memorial, the Vance, the Oaks, and the Derby. Really, Racing Office did a tremendous job. This is a nice card.
It really is, and we stacked the stakes races all together, so the final eight on the program of 10, starting just after 3 Central, 4 Eastern, as you said. We've added a pick four. There will be 3 pick fours on the card. Usually we only have 2 when we're less than 12 races or 11 races, but we went ahead and added the third since it was all stakes. So we'll start pick fours in race 2, race 4, and then race 7 for the final in the prime time. So a little bit of overlap on the first couple, but... fans seem to like it, especially when you get all stakes races in those pick fours.
Well, that middle pick four, I'm just looking at in terms of field size, they're starting with the Remington Green, the mile and the eighth turf race, 9 by 6 by 9 by 6. So you got the two full-size fields, two more compact fields. But frankly, even in that Ricks Memorial, the last leg of the middle pick four and the first leg of the late pick four, you've got 5 horses between 2-1 and 6-1, basically. The morning line says, Dale, that's a linchpin race. You better get the seventh race winner right if you're going to have multi-race success on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's a short enough field, so would be surprised if people hit the all button on that one. Even though it's short, only 6, and you're risking getting a even money or less favorite if it comes down to that to come in. But like you said, you got to catch that one to get the to try to go back to back on those pick four. So it's an interesting race. And that one, I'm picking that one. I've got I'm a Lucky Charm, a horse that's been local. As a matter of fact, I think all but two entries have been local last time out. So Mike Maker says in Dana's Beauty last out was Ellis Park in early August, and then Perry Oaf, who's a local trainer at Remington Park and on the Texas circuit primarily, ran up at Kentucky Downs in late August with Wild Express. So that one's coming back into us, but it's been here many times. So interesting race, short field. I went with I'm a Lucky Charm in that one. And, odds-wise, 5-2, probably the favorite. Yeah, second choice online. So.
No, let's go through that late pick four. That's a good okay. jumping-off point, actually. The eighth comes up, the Vance, and this is the Elders sprinting three quarters.
This is a really interesting race. And again, it's short field, but they're all talented. So if you're going to have short field, you'd rather see horses with talent than just one exceptional one and everybody else chasing it by minor check. You know, Jackson Traveler from the Atchison Barns, Stuart Elliott up, that one with a win in this race goes over the $1 million mark. For West Point Thoroughbred's owner, and was impressive in the tune-up race here on opening weekend at Remington Park at 5 furlongs. A very interesting tune-up because this race is 6. But U.S. Army is a horse that's one to watch. Has gone route racing primarily the last year or so, but at the age of 4, decided to drop in a sprint. And obviously, the cowboy Sean Davis and owner George Sharp had a plan for U.S. Army because they must have been aiming for the Vance to go 6 furlongs on October 29 and did it really, really well, coming from just off the pace under David Cabrera, who keeps them out, winning easily and putting up a time under 1 minute 10. So that was impressive enough. They rolled back with a Sharp half-mile workout a week or so ago. So U.S. Army could be very tough in this race. Of course, I say that. I didn't pick U.S. Army. Who's 4-1 on the morning line? I went with Run Classic, who currently is being guided by Ray Ashford at Remington Park. Tom Durant, the owner, but one who's primarily had great success this year, at least at Gulfstream Park, is sprints down there.
Run Classic, longtime associated with Brett Calhoun, and then Jose D'Angelo took him to Dubai for the Golden Shaheen. You mentioned U.S. Army and. The decision to reorient for sprints. He's been first or second in 8 sprint tries like this. He's had 3 wins in 3 seconds, and he's 5-for-8 at Remington. U.S. Army 4-1, and Run Classic 3-1. Feel like the principals, Jackson Traveler, hard hitting. 6-year-old that actually is still a horse. He has not been gelded, this Munnings son, and he's kept good company over the course of his career. He's a great stake winner. Jackson Traveler and Stewie Elliott riding back for West Point and for Steve. Then that gets us to the 3-year-old action and the Oaks and the Derby and the 3-year-old fillies, the mile and the 16.
I went local on this one. I couldn't throw Miss Code West out, and I went ahead and picked her. She runs her race almost every time. She tried turf over the summer at Lone Star Park. That was a failed experiment, so that's probably not ever going to happen again. But against restricted company here in early September in the Oklahoma Stallion Phillies Handicap, that one for progeny of registered Oklahoma Stallion, she won easily. She only had to beat 4 others, but pulled away without effort in the stretch under Floyd Wethy. In a 7-furlong race. Now, stretches back out a little bit longer to a mile and 16th. Has won at a mile and 70 in the past. It's a perfect undefeated record at Remington Park on the main track, 5-for-5. She was our horse of the meeting last year. She won all of her state bred races as a 2-year-old and comes on and wins the then Trapeze Stakes, the open company big 2-year-old race for the fillies that we run on Springboard Mile Night. So she's shown that she deserves the look and the effort. She ran a nice race at the Silver Bullet Day in early January, or late January at Fairgrounds, battle for the lead and gave it out coming down the stretch. But she can handle the 2 turns, and I like her. She doesn't have to have the lead. She came a little bit off the pace last time, not much, but sat behind it and just moved and had plenty left. And Kevin Scholl, great story. This guy, he only has he has less than two handfuls of horses at Remington Park. I think he has like six, maybe eight stalls tops. He does all the work himself. He's an interesting character. I called him after she had a really nice work in her preseason. I said, "Who rode her?" And he goes, "Me." I said, "Oh, okay, never mind. Good job, thank you." So he does. He literally does the work, and he handles the galloping, the workouts, and everything else. And she's a great little story, and you know, she's my pick now. Alpine Princess from the Brad Cox barn, of course, loaded nationally. That one's in now, and that horse is going to be. She's going to be very, very tough in there as well. So if Miss Code West can get it done as the local charge, it will have to be an impressive effort because there's some nice rivals coming in for that one. And Chi-Chi, interesting enough, Walensky ships back from Del Mar, heading back to Florida. He did this last year as well and came in and won a couple of races on the Oklahoma Derby card, including Chi-Chi winning the E.L. Gaylord for two-year-old fillies at 6.5. So Chi-Chi trying to stretch it out to get the Oaks in this one. I didn't pick her, but it's just an interesting story, and this horse obviously liked Remington Park last year, and the team is going to try once again this year to get a stakes win as they travel across country. Ramon Vasquez in the ride, Chi-Chi and others on the card, multiple leading jockey at Remington Park in his time here before he moved on to go to New York and California. Now he's up in Kentucky, headed back to Oakland, I believe is his pattern, but he's had a very good career in his time at Remington Park and definitely knows the track.
Well, we're a big fan of Ramon Vasquez, and in fact rode for us this summer at the end of the meet with the horse that runs today with Landauer, and I think he could compete at any level. I remember when he first kind of came around a little bit, and I remember asking Asmussen, who was using him, I said, "Tell me about this, the Ramon Vasquez, a kick and ride." Just the fact that that Steve would use him, and of course, Steve, the Asmussen, the factory of jockeys, it kind of has caught up, probably to the concerns of jock agents everywhere that Keith and Eric, and of course Keith came back this past week to ride, mm-hmm. and that was a serious injury, and he's back faster than anybody would have expected. This Miss Code West, I easy to root for in this spot, and Kevin Shaw, that would be great if she could pull this off.
And it is. And you mentioned Steve; he's as critical on jockeys as probably any trainer in the world, because he started out that way. His brother was a champion jockey. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. And if he puts you on a horse and he believes in you, you've got a chance to have a really nice business for many, sure. many years. And he doesn't just throw up anybody that happens to be sitting around without him out in the race. I mean, he knows what he's doing. And the interesting factor is with the family creating more jockeys, how that's going to play out. But both those boys are doing very, very well. Yeah. In their first couple of years of getting after it, Eric, in his first year, still an apprentice. So, it's an interesting story. But if Steve Asmussen puts you on, you've done something right.
Well, it's a good group, and you do have when you got McPeak and Cox and company sending in horses. Interesting that Doc Gorham sends a horse in. The Caracanti, Just Be Quiet, shows up out of the Indy base, and Lemoness for Asmussen. This is kind of could be a coming out party, and certainly, here's an undefeated Asmussen that we just sort of got around to talking about.
Yeah, and she had a really nice workout here just a couple of days ago at Remington. Typical Asmussen type work, not too fast, but it means something. 50.72 going a half mile. Did it on Tuesday. Let's see, 26. Yeah, Tuesday, and track was labeled good, so we had some damp weather evidently overnight in our strange Oklahoma City weather environment, where one neighborhood could get a half inch of rain and the rest of the metro area gets zero. But it happened here. We had a massive rainstorm, hailstorm on Tuesday afternoon, and literally it tracked a path about 40 miles long, but only about a half mile wide. If you weren't in that area, you got no rain, but you also didn't receive massive hail damage, which some parts did. So it's just how it goes here. But let me ask, undefeated, nice workout, and for the Winchell Thoroughbreds team and Asmussen and Stuart Elliott up, nice win here to prep for this one in Conditional Allowance Company late August. And you cannot discount her. Definitely not. Also, I need to note, from what I'm being told from our racing office, everybody's now in for the stakes races, which is good news. We had a flight in from the West Coast, landed early yesterday morning, and then the other shippers from Kentucky and other parts around the country are on the ground. So that's very good news that everybody's here, and we'll have a chance to, I would believe tonight for sure, and then maybe tomorrow as well, school in the paddock at Remington Park to try to get used to, if they've not been under the lights, to deal with that, because we start middle afternoon on Sunday, but, you know, the day is getting shorter and shorter with every passing date on the calendar now. So we will be under the lights for the big races towards the end of the card. The lights usually come on anyway. We start at 6:30 Central normally, and we have them on anyway because the shadows are out over the stretch at that point. So if they've not been under the lights, I would imagine we'll see some schoolers tonight and tomorrow in the Remington Park paddock. We'll try to point those out on our feed as they become known to us.
Very nice. Well, let's take a look now at the Grade 3 Derby. And, boy, this is a very good addition. These might not be, you know, banner names. However, it's a very accomplished field, Dale. In a lot of ways, you start, you know, with E.J. won the Cup, who has won the Turf Paradise Derby, the Texas Derby, and the St. Louis Derby. You've got the Canterbury Derby winner, the local flat handby for Boyd Caster, the flat-out gelding. You've got Society Man showing up here for Gargan, and Danny said he was, maybe last time I talked to Danny, probably a month ago, and he mentioned Society Man was ticketed for this. Excuse me, won the Matt Wynn, third in the West Virginia Derby behind Dragoon Guard. This is really a nice group. The Ellis Park Derby winner, Most Wanted, who was the second undefeated horse under the radar in these two races. We just mentioned Lemon S, who's 3-for-3. Here's Most Wanted that is 3-for-3. Really a nice group of eight for the Oklahoma Derby.
It's a deep field. We only have the one graded winner in there with Society Man, who came back after a dismal Kentucky Derby to win the Matt Wynn at Churchill a few weeks later in that. But and this race normally pulls a few more graded win-type horses. This year, there's a few that have been in those races. They just haven't been able to knock them off. So Society Man, the only one with that on his resume. But Most Wanted, undefeated, Brad Cox, Gary and Mary West own. Cox trying to break a record in the Derby. If he gets a win, he will become the all-time leading trainer in this race, currently tied with Donnie Von Hamel, who both have won three Oklahoma Derbies in the history of the 35-year race prior to this 36 running coming up on Sunday. So, and Cox won all three of his in a row, 2019, 2020, and 2021. So he's taking a couple of years off trying to get back after it. And I think Most Wanted could get it done. Sharp workouts, guided along slowly, only a few races so far this year, and has been off since early August when that Ellis Park Derby. I'd like Most Wanted in here, but there's a lot of chances in here. It's a good deep field of eight. EJ won the Cup, no slouch, of course, winning the St. Louis Derby most recently. Kenny McPeak used the St. Louis Derby to Remy Zangle a couple of years ago to win with Rattle and Roll, who's gone on to have a very nice career, and he's knocked off a few great races since leaving Oklahoma City that fall afternoon. Indispensable, John Sadler shipped in. I know this one was double-ended, I believe, in the California Crown race as well, but he's here instead. Billy Gutierrez, who rode briefly here for about a month or so a couple years back, is now set up shop out in California, doing very well there. He's coming in to ride that one and some others on the card. EJ won the Cup, speaking of jockeys, I can't go without saying this. Mike Smith, back at Remington Park for the first time. He rode one horse here in the spring of 89, back when we had two thoroughbred seasons, the spring and a fall. In 1988, when Remington first opened, inaugural season, he was the second leading rider in the colony. That very first season, wow, of fall 1988, was 60-some-odd wins. I think it was 68. And then he left. He came back for one other stakes engagement, and that was it. We've not seen him since, and of course he's gone on. He's done all right since leaving Remington Park, a Hall of Fame career. how many Grade 1 winners, of course, the great Zenyatta, among others, Kentucky Derby win. So he's coming back to Remington Park for the first time in over 30 years to ride here. And so we're glad to have him back, and that will draw some interest as well. He, you know, he was really good when he was young, and he's stayed really good going into knocking on the door of 60. So that's a great career, and we're happy to have him in to ride EGO in the Cup. Looking for yet another Derby win. It would be his fourth on the year if he can get it.
That's a great aside about Smith. Who was the leading jock that year when he was second? It's got to be Barry, no?
Yeah, there's more stories, yeah. So first of all, I put out a picture with Mike Smith with our release last week. He probably won't like it. He had a full head of hair, and he had a nice 80s mustache going on at the time as well. None of that exists anymore for Mike Smith. But he was second in the inaugural standings to John Lively, who at the time was his father-in-law.
Oh, wow. And, how about that?
You know, in those days, Remington was brand new, obviously, and a lot of the riders were on a circuit. That was in the glory days of Exarban up in Omaha, Nebraska, which ran a tremendous summer meet in those years. And unfortunately, it fell by the wayside. But a lot of riders that rode at Exarban in Omaha came to Remington Park and set up shop here. And at the time, remember, there was no Texas paramutual racing. So jockeys and trainers came in from all over, mostly from Nebraska. A lot came in from Arlington, Chicago, and quite a few from the Kentucky circuit in those days. So it was interesting. But, yeah, it's been a long time. We're going to be happy to have Mike Smith back. And we've been told he's going to be here, if not by race one, right after. So he'll be here for the card. Not named anywhere else, but he'll be on hand.
Before we hit a couple of the other spots earlier on the card, Dale Day with us talking about the Oklahoma Derby card on Sunday at Remington, OKC. And there is one horse that has got a sidebar, and that's Canada Gate, the Constitution Colt, bred by Judmont and broke the maiden near the end of August at Del Mar for Judmont and Baffert, and was privately purchased by Costa Aronis. And John Sadler took over the training, and note a 59-3 bullet, and then a 59-4 near bullet, and Canada Gate catches my eye a little bit here as something of an obscurity, 8-1, and I would be very cognizant of him. I don't think this is an accident.
No, absolutely, and you mentioned the solid work pattern since the new connections took him over, and you've got to think, just looking at if there's things on paper, that he's going to be out there winging it with Most Wanted on the front of this mile and eighth race. If they're not together, they're going to be separated by maybe, you know, a length or so, not much. So I used that one in my top four. I haven't picked fourth. I used Most Wanted first. My other picks, just really quickly, Indispensable, third, EG won the Cup second. So, but yeah, that's a good point. And trying to come in off a maiden win and looking at the history of our race, we have never had a horse whose most recent race was at Del Mar win the Oklahoma Derby. So that would be a first as well.
There you go.
And John Sadler bringing two in for the race, Canada Gate and Indispensable. So yeah, it's an interesting field. It's going to be a good wrap-up race to a big day of racing here on Sunday. And the weather's going to be absolutely perfect. Of course, anybody that knows Oklahoma weather, you can get all four seasons in a couple of days. Right now, we're actually getting a fall, for us at least. It's going to be low 80s, somewhere between 80 and 84, depending on which forecast you want to watch here. And perfect weather. So fast and firm expected on Sunday, and we're really looking forward to it.
Just a quick rundown, top picks and horses in the Flashy and the Remington Green and the Gaylord and the Kip DeVille.
Okay, Flashy Lady for a two-year-old filly going 6 furlongs. Excuse me, that's for the older horses, my bad. I'm getting my races confused here. I went Closing Act in that one, how the Asmussen Barn, Elliott Up, solid workouts, won at Lone Star back in mid-July on their final weekend stakes race, win there against State Bred Company for Texas Breds. Douglas Sharbar, the owner, Closing Act, my pick there. Second, I went Holly Dolly, who's really been sharp. Excuse me, two wins here at Remington Park. at 7 furlongs and 6, and coming from off the pace, both of those races for Ron Diego, the jockey, Ray Ashford. So those are my top two in the Flashy Lady. Remington Green, our richest open company turf race of the year at a mile and eighth at the tip of the chute. And that one I took Unload. I'm going to go on something different here. Unload, again, out of the Athelstan Barn, won the Governor's Cup on the main track on opening night. And we'll try the turf for the first time. But it was very impressive to me winning that Governor's Cup, handled the mile and eighth, no problem. And after a second of the Cornhusker up at Prairie Meadows and earlier in the summer, I went back with Unload. I just like the horse. He's been here throughout, has handled all the weather and the warm times of the early part of the season now coming into the cooler part. So that's my pick in that, the Remington Green. Gaylord, this one for the two-year-old fillies, 6.5. My choice in there will be Sophistry, Sam Walensky, Ramon Vasquez up, making a turf to dirt switch one last time on Del Mar Sprinting, breaking the maiden. Sharp work since that one, and coming in, I think the speed on the front of this one, and since Walensky's team won with Chi-Chi last year in this race, I think they'll try to make it two in a row with that. And finally, for the males, Kipta Ville, two-year-olds, 6 furlongs, Ring Seeker. I'm just now realizing, Steve, I'm an ass who's a homer, I guess, on Sunday. It's not usually that way, but that's how it's going to turn out. Ring Seeker will be my pick there. Another one coming off the stakes win on final weekend at Lone Star. Two stakes victories, one at Open Company and then one at a restricted company at Lone Star this summer, and a good work recently here at Remington to tune up.
It is Oklahoma Derby Day, and as I mentioned earlier, sometimes these kinds of days are the wind down at the end of a meet, but not by a long stretch. Still plenty of racing through and into mid-December, and we'll be there for Springboard Mile. And Dale, we'll probably probably catch you next week early, maybe Tuesday, for a little recap.
All right, let's do it.
Oklahoma Derby Day at Remington, everybody. Should be the focus of your action on Sunday after you've had enough of California Cup and what's going on here in New York and at Churchill as they wind down. Dale Day, everybody. The Dale Day on your Twitter. Dale, I appreciate it. Talk next week. Dale Day, folks. There you go. Hammer's going to join us, and while we reach for Hammer, and then Dave Grenning's going to move over and sit with me and close out the morning from here at Historic Aqueduct. I love it. I just wanted to pull from yesterday, I as I was sort of straightening PPs from the stacks here. In that opener, I mentioned the nice Ellen J. Foxwoods winner, the Gervin filly that they bought by Airdrie and the late Governor Jones, $190,000 October yearling. Stunner, 86 buyer. This is a serious filly, and won by a half a dozen yesterday with Flavian Pratt in the second start, 6.5 furlongs. I keep a very close tab on Stunner. I'm going to save that set up, that particular chart. Hammer standing by, and Hammer, good morning.
Good morning to you, Steve. Just when you think you've run out of big weekends, they keep coming, right?
Next week, Fall Stars at Keeneland, and we'll have more here in New York with the big 2-year-old dirt action. It's not going to let up between now and November.
Yeah, and we're officially 5 weeks now, right? Breeders' Cup starts probably 5 weeks from the minute we're talking, early in California on the Friday, but. You know, it's funny hearing you talk about Aqueduct that you broadcast there 3 times. I was counting up my appearances at Aqueduct, and I think it adds up to exactly 3 as well. I mean, I did fly out a few times early in the 2000s for talk to Charlie Hayward about possibly coming out there to work.
Right.
But that doesn't count. But I went to the Breeders' Cup, the number 2.
Did you really?
A buddy of mine came out because we had to. second time was the 1993 Wood Memorial. Storm Tower won it with Benny Perkins. But it was me and Jimmy's Uncle Hugo, who was one of the, loved the track, and we would go out together. And the best story about that was we came out to the car, Jimmy's brand new Diamante, didn't start. And it got towed home, and we had to hitch a ride with somebody to get back. And the third time, I went sometime during the Monmouth meet, so it had to be in the mid-90s. I went out with agent Dixie Shea, a good, great guy. And I don't know who he had at the time, but we went out there, and I don't really pay attention. He drove. And all I know is we left Aqueduct, and, in the wintertime, of course, it gets dark early. And all I know is I wasn't paying attention, but I thought we were in the car an awful long time. And we looked up, and it said, "Welcome to Southampton." So he made the wrong turn coming out of Aqueduct. And actually, that's the only time I've ever been out to the Hampton Theater was on a wrong turn in the middle of the night. So it was pretty funny. So those were my Aqueduct experiences. Made me think about it. I started cracking up. I'll never forget that sign. Welcome to Southampton.
Unbelievable.
Okay. So right then, I kind of said, I think we went the wrong way. But anyway, took the long way home, which we've done before. But
Dixie Shea, Jose Farrar, maybe, no?
He had a few riders, and it could have been Jose was riding it the day or something, and I wanted to just take the ride up there, and it was pretty funny.
I love it.
You got to have a story somewhere. And the story of the day, I think the word of the day is that if we were on it, the duck would come down and be Shabuzi. I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that more than I have before. A lot of stuff is going to be going on in San Diego this weekend. You hear a lot of this. What are they doing? What's going on out there? But we're trying to create something in California. I got to give them credit for. You got to start somewhere. And you had Nate on earlier, and trying to mix up a little entertainment with racing. And what is happening tomorrow, in the next 2 or 3 years, it might evolve into something a little different. You never know. But when it's all said and done, it comes down to the racing. Now, if the racing isn't good, then it doesn't really matter. But, congrats to the racing office that did a great job. I mean, the card came together just fantastic, and you can, when the racing's good, you can build off and do other things. So glad to hear that. The contest that Nate mentioned, it's amazing that the big money, $6,000, a lot of money, doesn't scare people off. It brings the big boys together. I mean, they like to play for that. Chances are they're going to spend that during the day anyway, so why not get paid double if you're going to have a good day?
No, this is going to be a hit. I don't think there's any. I think all the elements. A lot of people I think rolled their eyes at the announcement, but it feels like it's going to work.
Yeah, and like I said, when you try some of these things, you have to try it, and maybe some things will work better than others, and you can peel them out and bring something else in, but you do have to start. And this time of year, this is a day that's been run for 30 years plus, or 40 years since Oaktree's been around. It's the Breeders' Cup Prep Day, so it's not new, but it put a little pizzazz on it when you throw some kind of money like that at the purses and try to entertain a little bit. So we'll give we'll see how it goes, and you never know unless you try. So
exactly.
I say kudos to the racing office for putting together the big show. And I know you had Brad on earlier. I listened to part of it, but. It's some of the races as they do nowadays. They appear couple of races appear chalky on paper, but sometimes they don't end up that way, as we all know. But we can. Where do you want to start? How do you want to do it?
You could start the Unzip Me. Just run through.
Okay. Yeah. No, the Unzip Me. Now this is a strange phenomenon that happens on big days at tracks all the time, and and sometimes, especially management, doesn't get it. So here we have, you've got the $200,000 Oak Tree Mile, the $1 million California Crown, the 750 Eddie D, the 750 John Henry, and the $100,000 and Zitney gets the biggest field. Right?
So
it happens many times, and it's, you know, it's all about timing and you know, conditions and just how it falls. And, you know, three-year-old fillies going down the hill because they don't do the hill as much. You know, these races don't come up around as much. So an opportunity for some horses to try for the first time. And then, you know, at this point, there's not really a three-year-old filly that's going to scare a bunch of others off. So, but I always find that intriguing that, you know, purses and everything on big days. But so big field. Unzip Me was, of course, we named that race. I thought that was a kind of a cool name anyway, but it's actually named after a mare that trained by Marty Jones that I counted last night. I was adding up. I counted 7 stake wins down the hill for her. So she deserved it. And anyway, a quick run through for the Unzip Me. Once again, the hill. We either kind of want to go with a hill specialist or a turnbacker, and in this race you get luckily you get both in one horse, Zona Verde, who kind of likes the hill a little bit, but also is a turnbacker that we like and facing better. And if she can, the gray filly likes it at all. I really like her on top. Golden Canary shipping in. Ante Farna from the Vladimir Sarin barn are okay. And you know what? A long shot from the hot Richard Mandela coming off a smoking Kentucky Downs meet. Alluring on the outside. Could offer a little bit of a price play at 12-1. So we like, I think... like I said, the Zona Verde has that nice, perfect combination, and looks like she'll be able to settle and close with the leading rider, Hernandez. Thrown in the middle of the mix is a cowbred race, part of the pick five, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, part of the pick six, excuse me, start of the pick five. You know, usually these races go with the horses that have run a little bit and shown some promise, and the 4, 5, 7, and whatever order you like, those are the ones that look like they are more appealing. I think Michael McCarthy is a first-timer in here. Grateful My Love, the 9. So keep an eye on the action on that one. Starts out at 10-1. And, you know, if you get a little price in there, that might be one to throw in. Right back to the stakes action. And the John Henry, I you know, heard you said Jeff was a little under the weather yesterday. But, I'd love to see him work this thing out with the sheets because, as you've looked at it as well, everybody has the same number. I mean, 3, 4, 5s are in there all the time, and boy, as we know, these races kind of come down to the trips. 6 of the 11 in here are come out of the Del Mar handicap, you know, so is it going to be the same type of race where Dicey Mochara just kind of missed last time? You love to include a speed horse in your picks. They're playing the horizontals and that might be the one. I went for the old Phil D'Amato trifecta, one of the ones that wasn't in the Del Mar handicap last time. Divin Propus, however you pronounce that, the French bred, coming off an allowance win. Decent number heading in the right direction and just kind of being a newbie in here. I like him and Rock Emperor, who's always tough for me to narrow down, and Gold Phoenix. I mean, these long turf races and anything over 2 turns dominated by D'Amato, so I'm not going to, but I wouldn't mind going 5 or 6 deep there if I'm playing a pick 5, because some of these other ones I think you can narrow down. The Eddie D, which used to be the opening day feature when we finally came up with that, and it would be great to get Eddie there. We tried to do that all the time, but it would be great to see him there. I see a horse in here that I couldn't believe was 4-1 in the program, the 2-horse first piece. Mark Latt loves the course and is turning back again, so another double feature here. I think a lot of the money is going to go on the Invader, Big Invasion, a newbie to the course. He's one of the ones that's trying to stretch out going to the 6.5. Apparently been in the distance once, not not winning, but most recently doing the five, five and a half, a couple sixes in there. So I'm willing to take a stand against Big Invasion on the win end and going with first piece. I like King of Gosford. Got to throw D'Amato in a little bit, and I like those two. With maybe the Joe Orsino horse, Eamon. I know he was looking for this race. Excuse me. We talked at Kentucky Downs. You kind of throw in a little goofball mile 70, but I think he was afraid if he ran a week later, it might have been too close to this race. So he's been pointing to this Eamon, and at 20-1. If he fires, he could be the upsetter in here from the Joe Orsino born. We're glad to have him supporting us. Quickly to the California Crown, the former Goodwood / Awesome Again, going to end up with six horses in here. And I want to point out there's four Grade One winners in here, and I think you'd be hard pressed to find a dirt race Grade One dirt race run this year that has four Grade One winners in here. So. In this case, the money did talk. Maybe some of these horses would have run elsewhere. Newgate won the Santa Anita handicap. You say, yeah, big deal. How good was that race? Well, turns out the fourth place finisher in there, Island Falls, went on to win the Jockey Club, I believe. And the fifth place finisher in that race, Mixto, went on to win the Pacific Classic. So maybe that race turned out better than it looked on paper. National Treasure, to me, is the horse you got to beat. Muth is making his comeback, and we always talk about Bob. His comeback against older, I should say, first time against older, and they're ready to roll when he's running. He could have gone other ways. He didn't. Senor Buscador, just when you think he might be a prep here, he could, what he did in San Diego, this is definitely a spot to watch out for him. At 6-1, I would definitely use him, too, but I think National Treasure is the one. The last race, the City of Hope, Johannes, however that horse is pronounced, had some opportunities. I mean, he nominated to the Mint Millions. He's a Kentucky bred. He could have run a couple weeks ago for $2 million. And I saw Tim on the backside a couple weeks ago, or maybe even last week, and I said, what's the deal? He said, you know what? We just wanted to stay here. With the Breeders' Cup being here, didn't want to have to ship back and stay here. So he's here. I think he's proven that he is the new leader in the clubhouse. You got to use him. DeJour likes the Santa Anita track. Some of these horses, the turf course, some of them don't necessarily take the Del Mar. He has, but I think back on his home turf, he'll be fine. And can't leave Phil D'Amato out. Almond Dairies with Pratt on the outside, I think, is a price horse you got to use. So. A real good day of racing. I know you got Dave sitting there chomping at the bit, and I wanted to say hi to him. I think, why do I think, when I think of Aqueduct, I think of Dave, and you mention him, and he's there, and we'll let you get Dave in on the action.
Hammer, how you doing, buddy?
Good, always a pleasure. Now, I mentioned 1993, that's right about the time you stepped onto the scene, right? Sometime around there?
Right around there. I came to New York full-time in 94. I was covering racing on the East Coast in 91, so 93 I would have been around here somewhere if there was a big race.
Yeah, okay, so you remember that. I was trying to think, did they split the wood one of those years? Or am I thinking of, what's the prep to the wood? Maybe it was the prep they split.
Yeah, I'm not, now you're going back, they're testing the old memory, and I might not be able to remember what happened 2 weeks ago.
All right. Well, anyway, always a pleasure to hear your voice, and enjoy your day with Steve out there at Ozone Park.
Yeah, it's good to have company in the press box.
It's true. It's a little lonely up here. Lonely at the top, Dave, as they say, right? Hammer, I appreciate it. Good luck to everybody out there. It should be fabulous.
It's going to be a great day.
Nice. Rick Hammerly, everybody, and the California Crown action. We gave you wall-to-wall coverage this week on that, and wall-to-wall here at the Big A, and this is not a Woodward that is going to go down in the annals of racing history.
No, we had five entered. We're going to have four run. Hopefully, K Army is scratching as Belmont. Sunday he was running. Monday he was scratching after the work. Skippy Longstocking looks like the lone speed. But every time you think that there's too much speed, one horse goes. When you think there's one speed, Everybody goes. So I think the key to the pace might be Mask Parade, who, if you go back, and you know, he's been chasing next in his last couple of starts going longer. Which hasn't been, you know, hasn't been good for anybody chasing next, but you can go back way back in his form and he's got a little bit more tactical speed than you might think. So I could see Mask Parade maybe trying to be forward and getting the first run on Skippy Longstocking, and maybe he'll set up for one of Todd's horses. Tappet Trace was a huge disappointment last time. I might give him another shot. I mean, look, there's not going to be a great value in any of these horses here, but you know, I thought his Monmouth Cup race was really good, and he beat Highland Falls, who came back and beat him in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Maybe, you know, maybe he bounced off the big race, off the long layoff. I don't know. I was, you know, I was disappointed. I know Todd was disappointed in his race, but I think he's worth maybe giving one more shot to Tappet Trace, because, you know, if you just look at it on paper, it looks like Skippy's going to walk on the lead, and I just, when it looks like that, it just doesn't happen like that.
No, exactly. All right, press into the meat of the card.
All right, Turf Classic, as we mentioned earlier, Truly Quality is going to scratch, so we're down to six on that front. Warlike Goddess was a little bit of a surprise entrant on Sunday, just from the standpoint of, in my conversations with Bill before I left Saratoga, it sounded like, you know, he was going to take the train up to the race approach. She's seven now, but she's only had three starts this year, and all of them really have been pretty good. I mean, her race in the New York, she was third. It wasn't the greatest trip in the world, and it was shorter than she likes. I thought her race in the Robert G. Dick at Delaware was solid, maybe not the best of the division, but I just liked the way she did it. And, you know, in the Flower Bowl, she got kind of stuck behind, you know, in a paceless race where the long shot, air quotes, rabbits don't usually go 51-4 and 18-1, but this loose on the lead leader, Idea Generation, went wire to wire, and I thought she actually finished with a nice kick, you know, in a paceless race, and came within 1.5 lengths of getting a job done. This race, again, and again, we're looking at it on paper, looks to have the most pace in any race she's ever been in her career, and hopefully it plays out that way. But with Far Bridge, is probably going to show something from the outside, because they want to get her to the rail. It's a hint to the rail. It's not so much that he needs the lead, but Christoph likes to get him to the rail as fast as possible. Get smoking. It does have the rail, and you know he's going to go. He's one way. And I think Emmanuel will go, you know, could show some speed. And Silver Nile will be close too. So I actually think this race could set up well for Warlike Goddess, and what a feat it would be if she was able to win this race 3 years in a row against the boys. I think she's still an underrated filly, and, you know, when you start, I don't know, necessarily root for horses, but boy, I'd like to see her win this and win the Breeders' Cup and end her career with an Eclipse Award, because she has an Eclipse Award type of resume, a championship, I should say, type of resume, 12 wins, 21 starts, and, you know, beating the boys 2 years in a row, maybe three on Saturday. The Vosburgh might be, well, actually the Pilgrim's the more interesting race, I think, of the four stakes, but the Vosburgh is fairly interesting too.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's a disgrace that this race has been downgraded from a 3 to a 2, given who's won it the last 2 years. But I think the same trainer who's won it the last 2 years with Elite Power champion, the Cody's Wish champion, is going to win it again with Scotland. I just liked his comeback, his race last time out. I know it took him 4 times to get through the third level allowance condition, but he did it nicely. And I think, you know, I like him better than his stablemate Baby Yoda in here, who I think might just be pushing the edge of the envelope here. Dean Delivers is a nice horse, won 4 stakes at 4 different racetracks, but this is 7, and it's a graded race, and I'm not so sure. Going to the Pilgrim, I found this to be the most interesting of the group. I went with Concord Green. I just watched his race a couple times yesterday, and I thought it was a really solid effort. You know, got off a little bit slow, checked on the backside, had traffic in the stretch, got tipped out, and when he did, he really closed nicely. And, you know, you got to give, you know, Dylan's going to win one of these. He's still riding as well now as he was at Saratoga.
100%.
And I like Concord Green. Zulu Kingdom, the horse to beat for Chad.
Yep.
I think Concord Green might be the right one. It won't be 13-1, but won't be 2-5.
It's, you know, it's a solid enough set, and we'll look forward to next weekend as well.
Also, Sunday's Miss Grillo is a solid race, too. I was just writing that up, and that's a pretty solid race, too.
Who do we like in there?
Well, you know, I guess you got to go with Chad, right?
Yeah.
He's won the race 9 times. Look, before in my 2-year-old story, Opulent Restraint was the one he sort of pegged me on, and while she was a second out winner, she did get the job done, and I'll think she goes forward. But watch out for Jolie's May Day Ready. Problem with her is she's coming back a little bit
really quick.
Yeah,
3 weeks.
That might be the issue there. But it is the return of Frankie Dettori, who's coming back on Sunday with 3 mounts after getting injured about 9 days ago.
Outstanding. Dave Grenning, everybody. DRF Grenning, America's Turf Authority, and the captain of the Aqueduct Press Box. Thanks to Brad Free, his colleague, longtime colleague, and James Scully, Nate Newby from the Great Race Place, Nick Tamaro, busy in the Ville, the Dale Day, Remington Park, Oklahoma Derby Day Sunday, Hammer, me and Dave here, and good luck, safe trip to Landauer today in the fourth. Got lots of handicapping to post for tomorrow. Back with you Monday. And the Breeders' Cup action will start to get hot and heavy. Good luck, everybody. Talk to you Monday.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.